Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kiwi's Birth Tales. My brother name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Kia ora and welcome back to Kiwi Birth Tales. I am your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I've got Jai, who is four, and Ali, who is almost 2.5. Can't believe it. I also have a business baby, which is Your Birth Project, and Your Birth Project is the online hypnobirthing course you need to create your best birth. If you are feeling like you want more information about birth, or you're feeling a little bit anxious about how birth might go, or you just want to know more about your body and labor and birth and all of the things that play out that will help you to create a better birth. So if you just want to feel really good about your birth afterwards, then Your Birth Project is the course for you. If you're an iPhone user, there is also a Your Birth Project app which you can access. If you're not, it is coming to Android very soon, but regardless, you can access the course on the website on lots of different platforms, phone, iPad, TV, all sorts of things. So make sure you go and check that out. Today I am speaking with Hannah, and Hannah has such a journey to take us through. She fell pregnant with her son Billy initially really easily, and her pregnancy was pretty normal in quotation marks. She talks us through that pregnancy and birth experience, and then the focus moves to significant stress and trauma through multiple recurrent pregnancy losses, and she takes us through the journey of losing pregnancies, having to wait 3 miscarriages to do testing, finding out what was going on, and then losing another pregnancy after doing the testing into IVF and fertility associates treatment. So it's a huge journey. She does eventually get pregnant with her daughter Maeve, who is now 14 weeks old. So it's definitely got a light at the end of her story. And yeah, I just think there's so many things woven into Hannah's journey, and I'm so grateful that she was willing to come on the podcast and share with us. So I will let you jump into the episode now. If anything resonates with you, you want to chat about it, make sure you head to Kiwi Birth Tales on Instagram, where I will post Hannah's picture and tag her, and you can also post in the comments there, or feel free to send me a direct message or an email, Jordan, J-O-R-D-Y-N, at kiwibirthtales.com. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Hannah. Thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
No worries. It feels very strange to be actually talking to you after listening to you for like 4 years.
Yeah, amazing. Well, before we jump into everything, your story, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and who is in your family?
Yep. My name is Hannah and I am 32 and I'm an illustrator, author. I actually have my first children's picture book coming out next year with Scholastic Australia, and I live with, yeah, it's pretty exciting. I live with my husband Ryan and my 2 children, Billy, who's 4, and Maeve, who is 14 weeks tomorrow.
Wow, amazing. Very cool. And I know you've got a lot to share with us today. Why don't we start with what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Ryan?
Cool. So first pregnancy is pretty textbook. We were kind of not really trying and not really not trying. We just thought we were married, we'd see how things go. And it happened pretty quickly. I didn't think I was pregnant because I had some spotting and I thought, right, that's my period, all done. But then the spotting randomly stopped and I was like, this is really weird. I've never had a period like that before. So I did a test and I was pregnant, and it was a bit of a surprise, but a very, very heavy one. And we were actually living in Melbourne at the time. So even though we're both Kiwis, we were, yeah, in Melbourne.
Yeah. And how were you feeling when you saw that positive test?
I was really surprised at first because some months we'd been using protection, some months we hadn't. We weren't really thinking about it too much. So I was really shocked Yeah, but very, very excited. We were both thrilled.
Amazing. And what did you do next? Do you remember, did you go to your GP? Did you try to find a midwife? Did you tell Ryan straight away? Talk us through, your next steps.
So it's a little bit different because it's in Melbourne. So you don't have like one midwife. So we went to my GP and she was really great. But then the hospital midwives don't see you till I think you're like 17 weeks. So it was a lot of just waiting around. Luckily, it was a really smooth pregnancy, that one. So I just, the doctor faxed, I'm pretty sure it was faxed the information through to the hospital. And then I didn't get contacted but till like 17 weeks.
No, quite different to how it happens in New Zealand, but
Very different, really not personal.
really interesting. And so what did you do from there, in terms of testing? Did you have to do anything in the first 12 weeks before you actually met with a midwife?
I did have a dating scan, which was all normal. And I think we didn't do NIP testing. I think it was quite, I mean, I could be wrong, this was about 5 years ago now, but I think it was quite expensive in Australia, which put us off. But also, it wouldn't really have changed my decision. I was possibly a bit naive. Nothing bad had ever happened to me at that point. And I just thought, well, I don't mind if it's Down syndrome, we'll look after him or her, and it doesn't matter to us. But I guess I didn't realize the full scale of things that could go wrong at that stage as well.
And so what sort of happened from there? Talk us through your pregnancy symptoms. How were you feeling in your first trimester? And did you have any of the nausea or vomiting that some people get in pregnancy?
It was really good, actually. I pretty much didn't get any morning sickness. Didn't really feel pregnant a lot of the time. I had a tiny bit of spotting in the first trimester, but it was nothing to really worry about. It was quite a smooth pregnancy overall. Can't really think of anything that kind of went wrong. It was all just make it to your scans and enjoy being pregnant in the meantime. And I feel like, considering what happened afterwards, I feel really blessed that I had that opportunity to have such a normal, beautiful pregnancy.
And you find out the sex of your baby in your pregnancy?
Absolutely. At 20 weeks, I was like, I need to know. And we found out we were having a boy, which I was thrilled about. It was kind of nice because it's one of the only times you sort of find out the answer to a question, and either of the answers are going to just thrill you. So it was just really nice, finding out we were having a boy, and helped narrowing down names as well.
Awesome. And what was your sort of experience with antenatal, or did you do any birth education or anything like that in your pregnancy?
Yeah, I was pretty naive as well. I think I was one of the first of my close friends to have a baby, so I didn't really know what was going on. And we just took the hospital antenatal classes they offered, which was like a, I think it was like 8 hours or something one day, and you're just sitting in a room. It was quite overwhelming. But that's the only kind of birth education I'd. Oh, I also read that Juju Sundin, is that how you say it?
Oh,
Her
yeah,
book, Skills.
nice.
I found that really, really helpful. I kind of recommend it to everybody now. It was, brilliant.
Yeah, cool. Amazing. I love that book, Birth Skills, I think it's called, isn't
Yeah,
it?
birth skills is really, really good.
Cool. Amazing. And did you have thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go? Like after doing antenatal and reading that book, what was your sort of birth plan, or did you have a birth plan?
I didn't really have a birth plan. I was very relaxed about the whole thing. I was actually quite excited. I was like, oh, it's an opportunity to see what my body can do. And I was, yeah, I just didn't, I knew I wanted it at a hospital, in case anything did go wrong, but I just really was open to whatever happened.
Cool. And were you doing anything in preparation for birth? Like, did you do raspberry leaf tea, dates, any
I
of that
did
fudge,
raspberry
any of that
leaf tea,
stuff?
because we had a we actually had a wedding back in New Zealand in December, and we were planning on moving back then. So my son was due 4th of this is again so naive, I had no idea what I was in for. My son was due on the 4th of November, which is actually the day after my birthday, and we had a wedding on like December 6th, I think, or December 5th. And I was like, we're going back to New Zealand for the wedding, and then we're gonna probably move back to New Zealand for good then, to be with my family. So it was like, I really need this baby to not be overdue. So I did do raspberry leaf tea, which it seemed to have worked because I actually went into labor at 38 weeks. So I tell people to do raspberry leaf tea, but probably Billy was always going to come at that time.
Yeah. Amazing. And just before we go into like your labor and birth story, can you talk us through how the midwifery system worked for you there? So you met your hospital midwife around 17 weeks and obviously in New Zealand, you'd have like a lead maternity carer or an obstetrician. So what does it look like in Australia?
It was a different midwife every time. I actually did see the same midwife twice, but she didn't remember me, which was really nice. But you see a different midwife every time. It's quite impersonal. They just kind of do the standard checkup and then you're on your way. And then it's going to be a different midwife that you're in labor with as well.
Yeah. Okay. And because I think they have some other options. Maybe they didn't then, I'm not sure, but like you can do group midwifery care, I think, or I know their health system is different in terms of like private obstetricians and things like that. Were any of those options available to you, or was it just the hospital midwife that made the most sense?
I'm sure those options were available, but I was literally so naive, so didn't know anything, didn't research anything. It was just like doctor told me what to do. I was like, okay, I'll do it. I really just went along with whatever. Awesome. Yeah.
Amazing. And so you mentioned that he was born around 38 weeks. So talk us through your labor starting, how were you feeling into your labor and birth story from there.
Cool. So I got a lot of breaks and hicks all through the last trimester and they were getting quite strong. And then at 38 weeks, I think it was 38 weeks exactly, I went to the toilet and pop, my mucus plug came out. Very nice. And I called the hospital and they said, just come in, we'll just check you. They checked me and they were like, you're starting to dilate, you're having contractions, expect labor soon. And I think it was like, luckily my parents had come over from New Zealand because my mum was going to be with me for the birth. Maybe like a couple of days before this, maybe a day, maybe I think actually they landed the day I was 38 weeks. And so I was just hanging out with my mum in the day. My husband actually went to work and we went shopping and stuff. And I think I was kind of in early labor and we went home. I actually have really nice memories of the day of being in labor. Mm. It was me and my mum watching like an interior design show. Every now and again, I'd stop and I'd have a contraction and I'd do a nursery rhyme and bang the wall from the birth skills book and stomp my feet every contraction. And we had like bits and pieces to eat and it was actually quite a nice day and it only started getting painful. My husband did eventually come home. I think he brought ice cream back and it started getting really painful around 9 o'clock and they started going every 5 minutes. So we called the hospital and they were kind of like, well, wait till they come every 2 minutes. But I was like, no, we're going to hospital now. Like the hospital was 30, 40 minutes away and I was like, I can't imagine waiting. So we got in the car, drove to hospital, and luckily we did because after from getting to hospital, it was only about 2 hours until I started pushing. Yeah, because when I got there, they were like, I don't think they took me very seriously. I don't think they thought I was in active labor. They were like, oh, if you're under 4 centimeters, we're going to send you home. And so they checked me. I think I was 6 centimeters. So I got to stay, which was good because I was adamant. I was like, I'm not leaving. Spent most of the labor then in the shower, really being quite bossy and rude to my husband, telling him where to put the showers. And still like banging on the wall and doing nursery rhymes like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 once I caught a fish alive. And it seemed to really help. It sounds crazy and I probably looked crazy and midwives probably were like, who is this lady? But it actually really worked. And like I said, 2 hours later I was pushing. The pushing bit was definitely the hardest bit. I was pushing for about 2 hours and then a kind of a whole group of them came in. I think he kept popping up and then popping back down and popping up and popping back down. So then a whole group of people suddenly came in and the doctor talked to me and I thought he was going to say that I needed a C-section, which I was so ready for, like anything you tell me I will do right now. But he said, we're going to do an episiotomy and your baby's going to be Vontus. So they all came in, they did that, and Billy came out.
And do you remember, like, the feeling of being worried about an episiotomy or Vontus? Like, did you know what that was before you had it? Had you heard about it in antenatal? What were your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I'd heard about it. I definitely wasn't worried. I was just like, do anything you need to do to me. I'm so tired. I just want this baby out right now. Yeah. So I really didn't mind. I just wanted the baby out so badly.
And he was born, did they place him straight on your chest? And yeah, talk us through the next little while.
Yep, they placed him straight on my chest. And it was, yeah, I think I remember thinking, I'm never doing this again. This is crazy. And just, but I was crying and yelling like, this is my baby. I can't believe I'm holding my baby. It was, yeah, it was a really weird and emotional moment. Like, there's nothing quite like holding a freshly born baby on your chest.
And did you stay in the room with him on your chest while they stitched you up? Talk us through, yeah, the next hour or so.
Yeah, he stayed on my chest while they stitched me up. I remember feeling like the actual thread go through of the stitching and be like, this is horrific. Like, please, can everyone just stop messing with me? And because it's quite impersonal, like, I didn't know the midwives and stuff, they came over to me and they said, we do have a room. It's a double room. So your husband can stay the night too, but you guys have to be gone tomorrow. And this stage, it was like 5 a.m. And again, I was like, whatever, I just want a bed. I just want to go to sleep. But it was just really that feeling of like, you, it's my first baby. And it was straight away, like, you need to come in and get out.
It's a shame, that sort of, you know, initial experience, but it's interesting to hear, I guess, the differences in our healthcare system, and I'm sure we'll get to that.
Yeah, definitely.
As well, but yeah, okay. So talk us through the next 24 hours, I guess, and then the journey to taking Billy home.
Yeah, I was the next day. I started packing up, and the midwife who was on that day was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I got told I have to leave today." She's like, "You can have another day." I was like, "Oh, okay." And I was quite like, I think I was in shock about everything that had happened. And it was quite a normal birth, but just, it's, you've never done anything like that in your life before, and it's crazy. And I think they just, a nurse or a midwife came in and just said, like, squeezing my boob and expressing the colostrum. And I actually had no idea about colostrum. Again, I was like super naive. And so I was like, I don't really know what's happening. I'm expressing this colostrum into syringes and feeding my baby. And I had no idea that the amount went up so much each day. And I, this is how like clueless I was. I didn't even know like your milk came in. I just didn't understand why it wasn't like milk straight away. I was like, very clueless, and I felt very vulnerable and was not very supported by the staff really. And I was, didn't really understand what I was meant to be doing.
And do you remember feeling like, like, how was your mental health, or how were you feeling, like, emotionally at that time? Because it's like you're exhausted. You've also got a newborn baby, and then you've been through such a huge, like, experience with birth and post, you know, post-birth.
Yeah, I think I was really, like, I think I did get the baby blues and stuff as well. And I had, like, auditory hallucination type things where I'd, like, the Rugby World Cup was on at the time. So my husband and my dad were just watching it all the time. And when they turned it off, I could hear the cheers and I could hear the, you know, I just got, I don't know, I was very, very emotional and it was just shock, because it's the first time you've had a baby and you're just suddenly responsible for this tiny little thing, and it's just very overwhelming.
For sure. And how did you go with the next couple of weeks, like, adjusting to life with a baby and recovering from birth and learning to breastfeed? And talk us through your experience with that.
It was all right. It was, the breastfeeding was a huge problem. He just couldn't seem to latch, and I just didn't really have the support I needed to get it started. I ended up actually pumping for 5 months, which was insane. And I really wish I hadn't done it, because it was really bad for my mental health. But I just, I mean, he lost over 10% of his birth weight. So the nurses said to me that I had to top him up with formula. The midwives who came around to the house, it was a different one every time again. And I was like, well, which formula should I buy? And they were like, we're a breastfriend, like, breastfeeding friendly hospital, so we don't recommend a type of formula. And they just made me feel so bad. And it was just, we never really got there in terms of latching and feeding, and so from 5 months we formula fed him. And I honestly wish I'd done it earlier, because it just it's so stressful pumping. you know, you have to feed your baby and then you have to pump for the next feed. So it just makes overnight like that much harder than it needs to be.
And it's just such a shame again that like that was your experience with feeling all that pressure from a midwife that you don't know to breastfeed, or that they're a breastfeeding positive hospital. Like, what does that even mean?
I don't know. Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, it's just such a shame that there's still experiences like that out there in the world.
Yeah, me too. I honestly think we could have got there if we'd have had more support. But yeah, we came over back to New Zealand when he was 5 weeks, and just in this shift over and the change, it, you know, I got lost a bit in the system and didn't get much support over here either. So,
yeah, that's a shame. And how did you go with the move? Like, obviously, it's challenging with the newborn. So, yeah, talk us through the move back to New Zealand.
Yeah, it was I don't know what I was thinking. It was crazy. Like, we were, like, packing up with a newborn, and then I think we stayed in, a hotel, like, the night before. We were meant to fly out. I mean, luckily, flying with a newborn's actually fine. They're, you know, they can't do much apart from sleep. So that bit was fine. But it was just the whole stress of it. And he hadn't had his immunizations yet. So I was, like, freaked out about that. And, yeah, it was all very stressful. I don't know why I did it to myself.
Yeah. But you don't know the first time, right? Like, I was the same.
No, you don't.
Taking Jai all over the world, literally, and, like, just thought it would be fine. So, yeah, you don't. And like, so other people's experiences might be that, like, they did that and it was totally fine, right? It's just, you don't really don't
exactly
know.
Yeah, you don't know until you, and every baby's different, right, as well. So, yeah, it was fine in the end. And I was really glad to be back because, obviously, lockdown started from March, so we kind of got back just in time because it would have been very, very hard being in Melbourne because they had so many lockdowns.
Yeah, of course. And how did you go, like, once you were back here, and how did you find your actual physical recovery from birth? Talk us through that.
Yeah, actually fine. And I really sort of got in the swing of things, and you know, it was really helpful having my mum there because we lived with my parents for the first year. We were back in New Zealand, and it was, I've actually just got really lovely memories of the whole time. So after the initial just shock of labour and breastfeeding not going the way I had hoped, it actually all worked out really well. Billy's a real fun kid, so
awesome. Cool. And talk us through, I guess, once you've you know, you've had Billy, did you always want more children, or talk us through deciding, or did you decide that you wanted to try for another baby?
Yeah, I'd always wanted more children. I love children, I love babies. So it was definitely my plan. Me and my sister are 19 months apart and we're really, really close. So I thought, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna have two close together. So I think when Billy was like 15 months or 14 months old, we decided to start trying again. And we got pregnant straight away, I think that same month. So I was a bit in shock and I was like, oh, not actually sure if I'm ready for this, but excited nonetheless.
And was your pregnancy symptom sort of the same as your first time?
Yeah, I didn't have much morning sickness or anything. And maybe like a week or 2 weeks after getting the positive pregnancy test, I started bleeding. And kind of like, oh, well, this could go either way, because I did have some spotting with Billy, and my sister with her daughter had had quite a bit of bleeding in the first trimester. So I wasn't immediately writing the pregnancy off. I got my HCG numbers and they were okay. They weren't amazing, but they weren't also like, yep, this pregnancy is definitely over. So I was anxious and really worried, but I still had quite a lot of hope. And then maybe 2 weeks, the bleeding ended up stopping, and then maybe like a week or two after that, I actually ended up going to a wedding in Wellington, and it was actually at the wedding where I miscarried for the first time, which was not ideal. Yeah, it was quite an early, I would have probably only been about six weeks pregnant, so it was an early one. But it was still pretty devastating. I'd never had anything like that happen at the time. And so
heard of like people having miscarriages before? Like had you encountered that previously?
Yeah, like I definitely, this is really weird, but I'd always had this feeling like I was going to have infertility, always had this feeling. And I don't know whether it's because I just wanted children so much, but I always had this feeling deep down, like it wasn't going to be easy. And then when I had Billy and it was so easy, I was like, this is odd. Like, this is not what I had the feeling about. So in a way, I wasn't surprised that I had a miscarriage. It was upsetting and everything, but I'd read a lot about it and I wasn't, yeah. It didn't feel like a huge, huge shock. I'd read an article about secondary infertility that always stuck in my mind for some reason. So it was kind of a fear of mine anyway. But yeah, so I'd had that first miscarriage and I thought that was all over. And I was bleeding for about 6 weeks after. My mum kept being like, something's not right. I don't think a miscarriage should last that long. But I was kind of just trying to suppress it almost, just like I just wanted to not think about it and just move on. But the bleeding was getting like quite dark, like black almost, which I talk about it now and I sound kind of dumb. It's like, how could you have not picked up something was wrong? But I just wanted it to be over so bad. I just wasn't thinking. So yeah, like 6 weeks after the loss, I went to my mum's house with Billy. And just before I was about to leave, I popped to the loo and it was like a tap getting turned on. I was just bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. And I said to my mum, I need to go to hospital. Like, this isn't normal. So we were just all sort of making the arrangements just to get me into the car to go to hospital. And then the bleeding started like with huge clots. And I was like, I don't think I can get in the car. I need to lie down to stop this bleeding. So I laid down on the bathroom floor. Sorry, I might get a bit emotional. I still can't go into this bathroom in my parents' house without freaking out. I was lying on the bathroom floor. I could just feel the blood coming out and the clots coming out. And mum called an ambulance. And she was, they were telling her to massage my stomach. I don't know why. It's something to do with the bleeding. And they sent a first response unit out. I remember just, I think Billy was sitting on my face, like slapping it because he had no idea what was going on. He was like 15 months old. I think I like messaged a friend to come around and look after him for us. They gave me like a shot of transuxamic acid to stop the bleeding and oxytocin as well, which actually really hurt. And yeah, I got in the ambulance. My husband met me there, and then when I was at hospital, the clots were just like, it was just insane. They were just the size of golf balls, the size of fists. It was just, yeah, it's probably definitely the most traumatic thing I've ever been through. I had two nurses holding my hand while the doctor was like pulling them out. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was such an early miscarriage, you just don't think you would have something so serious happened to you. Like, I definitely remember thinking, what if I don't survive? Like, what if, you know, I never see Billy again? But yeah, it was pretty awful. They were like, I think I was very, very close to needing a blood transfusion. I think I was lucky the ambulance came when it did. But luckily I didn't. They just put me on like IV drip and IV drip antibiotics. They said you had a infection in the womb, endometriotitis, I think it's called. So basically my womb got infected, but they sent me home after I think a couple of nights in hospital, but they sent me home without doing an ultrasound. So I got home, everything was kind of all right, and then I just started bleeding again. So I was like, right, I actually messaged my midwife and she organized me to go straight into A&E. Went in and ended up spending like another day in hospital, another night in hospital. They scanned me and I had some tissue still remaining in the womb. So they scheduled me for, I think they called it like an acute DNC. So it's kind of like an emergency one. So I needed it done that day sort of thing. I got my first DNC done and they told me afterwards, there was like, this is horrible, but there were calcified remains in my womb and it just caused a big infection. So yeah, it was pretty terrible. And I mean, all up, when from the start of that miscarriage, from that first bleed to the end of it, it's probably like 2 or 3 months of going through it. So,
and they didn't give you any, like, because obviously miscarriages happen and pass, and you know, there can be no other issues. So they didn't give you any reason why, like, that could have happened. It was just, you know, really bad luck.
Yeah, they just kind of said it was bad luck. Yeah, they said it won't happen to you again. It's bad luck.
Right.
Yeah, they were, didn't really give me an explanation for it or were that interested into looking into it. I actually know someone else who hemorrhaged after an early miscarriage, so I think really they should have been testing my HCG levels to make sure they were fully going down. And I should have also been more aware that 6 weeks after a miscarriage, I should not have still been bleeding.
It's so hard though, if you've never had a miscarriage before and you don't have that guidance from a medical professional, then it's hard to know what's normal, right?
Exactly. Again, I was very, very naive. And I was also naive. I thought, right, that's my bad luck done. Just good luck from here, but obviously that wasn't the case.
And so what happened from there? Like, obviously that is such a traumatic experience for you, so how were you coping mentally after that, and did you and Ryan still think, okay, we want to try and have another baby, like, let's try and do it now, or did you want to wait? Talk us through that period of time.
No, I think I was like hyper focused on having a baby then. I was like, right, I just need to get pregnant again. And I don't know how well I was necessarily coping. I think the fact that I had Billy and I could focus on him was really helpful. Like, I couldn't just spend time ruminating on it because I had to be a mum and look after Billy. So you know, he was my real light at that time, in a very dark time. But yeah, as soon they said I could start trying again after I had a period. So I had a period, started trying again. Again, I got pregnant the exact first month we started trying. And I thought, right, this is it. This is the one that's meant to be. And we all went into lockdown again, because this is 2021, so lockdowns all the time. So I didn't get the dating scan until about 8 weeks. But, I mean, I was getting worse morning sickness than I'd ever had before. So I thought, you know, that was a good sign. I went into the scan on my own, my husband and Billy were waiting in the car for me. And I actually knew the lady who was the sonographer vaguely, and sat down. I was like, this is all great. And as soon as I could see it up on the screen, I just knew something wasn't right. The sac was the right size for how far along I was, about 8 and a bit weeks, but there was nothing inside of it. So that's something called a blighted ovum, which I had never heard of before. But basically either the embryo had stopped growing or didn't grow for some genetic reason. And so it's just an empty sac that unfortunately was still growing. My body had no idea that it wasn't still pregnant. So that was really hard.
Of course it was. And how did you, like, deal with that? Obviously you've got Ryan and Billy waiting for you in the car. Like, I guess talk us through what happened next, and did you need to go to hospital because of your experience with pregnancy loss last time? Like, what happened this time?
So I was, obviously I just burst out into tears. I was just so upset. And I think the biggest thing that I remember is just having to put my pants back on alone. And that sounds stupid, but just, you know, the sonographer couldn't touch me. No one could, everyone was wearing masks, and she left me to get changed. And it was just really hard doing it alone. Got back in the car. Obviously it was like a second upset having to tell him, like, no, this one's not going to work either. And they sort of gave me a choice on how to manage this miscarriage. But because the sac was still growing, I was like, there was no way of knowing how long a natural miscarriage would take. And I was so terrified of hemorrhaging again. So we just thought the best thing was to have another DNC. So that's how that one ended, with another DNC, and again in lockdown. So couldn't have anyone there. So it was a very hard experience.
And obviously after the trauma of your previous pregnancy loss, like, must have been really, really challenging for you and Ryan mentally.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was a bit like, how could this have happened again?
Yeah.
I remember, like, having an appointment with my GP on the phone because it was lockdown and just crying to her and being like, can you test me for something? Like, I've had two losses. And she was like, no, there's nothing we can do until you've had three. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's so cruel.
Yeah, I had this conversation recently with a friend, and it just feels like another woman's health inequity.
It so is, yeah.
Yeah, like
pregnancy loss. In the UK, they're changing it. They changed it in the UK to do testing after two losses, yeah. So,
yeah, wow.
I mean, that's a positive step forward. I really hope they do it in New Zealand, because I just think it's, I mean, every time I was having these DNCs, I'm risking my future fertility. You know, because there's the risk of something called Ashman syndrome, which is scarring in the uterus, and and it's trauma and it's awful, and I just don't understand why they wouldn't make you go through three heart attacks before they tested you. So
correct. It's such a, like, even just your mental health, not even the physical impacts that it can cause. I just, yeah, I always really struggle with the three losses before we do any testing approach.
And especially with my story, as we'll get to, it turned out that was a fix. So, I'm very passionate about hopefully getting it changed in New Zealand one day, because I think it's crazy in this world that we make women go through so much pain before we even attempt to help them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so you obviously go home from this experience, and what's the conversations that you and Ryan are having? How are you feeling now about having another baby, still in the same place as you were, desperately sort of being ready and wanting another one?
Yeah, again, I just was so determined. I was like, I need to be pregnant again. I need to have this other baby. Like, this drive.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't know whether it's like, the biological drive to be a mother, or I don't know what it is, but I just was like, this is what's going to heal me, is just having another baby. I need to get pregnant again. So again, waited 6 weeks. Every DNC I've had, it takes 6 weeks for my period to come back. So waited the 6 weeks for my period to come back. And this is, again, the thing with infertility. It's just the time everything takes. There's so much waiting. When you're so desperate for a baby, it's just so painful waiting all the time. So we waited 6 weeks for my period to come back, started trying, and again, we got pregnant the first month we tried. So I was pregnant again, found out in December, and then unfortunately a week later on Christmas Eve, I started bleeding again. And I was like, oh, please, God, I just don't want to spend Christmas bleeding. And I feel like I was granted like a little reprieve, because the bleeding stopped on Christmas Day. But then on Boxing Day, it was just, I like knew it was over. It was just, bleeding. So I was like, just devastated. I think I was devastated because it was like, okay, something's definitely wrong as well. Because technically the third one was a chemical pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hate that term as well, because any pregnancy is a pregnancy, right? But it was just as devastating as my other losses, and it was just like, something's wrong, like something's not right. And I guess the only silver lining at the time was, at least they'll test me now. But yeah, it was pretty rough Christmas.
Absolutely.
And so I think straight away, as soon as I could, I got into contact with an obstetrician. I have private health insurance, luckily, and so I tried to go through private obstetrician to get testing, because I just wanted it done straight away. And obviously it's an awkward time just after Christmas. So I just was so motivated, like, right away, I need to get in touch with someone. Someone needs to test me. So I went with an obstetrician and got testing. And she said to me, she was like, look, you've had a child. The chances of us finding a reason for these miscarriages is like less than 30%. Like, most likely it's going to be unexplained. So that's what I was prepared for. What I wasn't actually prepared for was finding out that I have something called antiphospholipid syndrome, which is a blood clotting autoimmune disorder.
Right.
So basically it's like the opposite of hemophilia in that my blood clots really easily. And that is one of the number one causes for recurrent miscarriage.
Wow.
Yeah. You have to do two tests 12 weeks apart to confirm it. And also you have to have had three losses before they'll diagnose you with it. But yeah, it's actually one of the easiest, most treatable causes for recurrent miscarriage as well, with aspirin and Clexane, the blood thinning shots. It's your chances of having a live birth are actually pretty high. So it was kind of mixed emotions. I was obviously like relieved there was a fix, but I was also devastated that they couldn't have, you know, told me that earlier.
Absolutely. And could have saved all that heartbreak potentially.
The obstetrician also said that I should take a 5-month break. I'm not really sure why she said that. I think she thought I was a bit crazy because this was 2022, and in 2021 when I'd had the three losses, I'd actually only had two periods all the whole year. And when you bear in mind that I had to wait for a period to start trying again each time, I was literally just pregnant, miscarrying, pregnant, miscarrying, pregnant, miscarrying. So I think she was like, take a 5-month break. And I was so against it at first, but it was actually the best thing I could have done for my mental health, because I got into running and I just sort of like, sort of kind of decompressed from just the whole pregnant miscarriage cycle for a bit.
And were you doing like anything else? Was there anything that they sort of said you could try to support your fertility journey, or was it literally just that you needed to, next time you were trying to be pregnant or fall pregnant, that you could do those couple of things that you mentioned and then, you know, hopefully that would help?
Yeah, I think that was the idea. Just do Clexane and aspirin and you'll be sweet. So we started trying again, I think in June or July. Again, I got pregnant straight away, which sounds like, you know, I think for some people that might be hard to hear, but I think it was actually part of my problem. I'll get to it later. But yeah, I got pregnant straight away again, and I was taking Clexane and aspirin from a positive pregnancy test, and at 7 weeks we went to a scan and there was a heartbeat, and it still remains one of the best moments of my life, I think. Even when you go through really hard things, there are some beautiful things mixed in there, and you shouldn't let what happens in the future color your past memories. But yeah, there was a heartbeat. I remember the sonographer was like, your baby looks so cute, and just being silly, because obviously it just looks like, you know, a bean. But yeah, it was a really good memory. A couple weeks after that, I think I was either like 10 or 11 weeks, I got like a tiny bit of spotting. Because of my past experiences, I was obviously like, what could this be? But also I wasn't crazy worried, because I'd had a tiny bit of spotting with my son. But they managed to get me in for like a really quick scan. And unfortunately, I went to the scan. Luckily, I was able to have Ryan there with me this time, and that makes a huge difference. But, you know, I could just see up on the screen, and the sonographer said, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat, which was really hard, because I thought that we had the fix, you know, I thought we had the solution, and we had a heartbeat, and everything was going so well, and it's just really hard to, the realization that it didn't work.
Yeah.
It was my fourth loss.
Oh, my heart just breaks hearing your story, Hannah. I think there'll be an absolutely unknown amount of people out there who listen to this and are grateful that you've been so willing to share, because it's a far more common experience than we probably realise. But yeah, I just cannot imagine that feeling. But I really loved what you said about not letting, you know, future experiences taint that moment of the 7 week having a heartbeat and feeling that real, you know, joy. But
like there are some ultrasound places that I can't even drive past because I've had obviously such bad experiences there. But the place that I had that ultrasound, like I always look at it and I think, oh, that was just such a beautiful moment of like, it felt like a victory, you know, we'd got a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I think it'll just, hopefully it'll just always feel like that, even though, you know, the loss was so sad. And we actually ended up getting another DNC as well.
Yeah.
Because my body just, my body's terrible at letting these pregnancies go. And it just wasn't doing it. And again, I'm just, because the embryo had actually passed away maybe like a week or two before the scan, they were like, it just increases your chances of infection.
Right.
So I just was like, I'll get a DNC. So it was my third one, which was quite painful because I think after my second one, the doctor had said to me, he's like, you're as healthy as it's like able to be. You're so fit. You're so healthy. We won't see you here again. This won't happen again. And obviously, was having another DNC, which was really hard.
And so how did you go from there? Like, did you go back to the same obstetrician to talk about what next? I guess talk us through, what you did from there.
No, I think I just wanted, like, a completely clean slate. I actually started thinking about something called hyperfertility. I don't know if you've heard of it before. I think it's kind of a bit controversial in the fertility, sort of infertility scene. It's the idea that your body doesn't do the sorting. So, you know, a lot of times when, and I'm not a doctor, so I don't know how well I'm explaining this, but a lot of times when the sperm meets the egg, like that'll happen loads of times without you knowing even. And then your body goes, no, I'm not implanting this because it's not going to work. So your body kind of like, I don't know how it works, but seems to know when there's going to be a genetic issue and not implant the embryo. But I'd been pregnant 5 times at this point, and every single time I got pregnant straight away. And I was like, that's not normal. It's meant to be like a 25% chance every time, every month of you getting pregnant. So I think the day I had my DNC or something, I got in touch with Fertility Associates, the IVF clinic, to book an appointment, because I was like, it wasn't just that I was so desperate for a baby at this point. I was also really desperate not to have another miscarriage, which sounds like the same thing, but it's kind of not. I just, every time I was having a miscarriage, my body was terrible at letting the pregnancy go. I was having all these DNCs. I was terrified about like having scarring in my uterus from all this intervention. And I was like, I just need to get from here to baby. I don't want to have another loss. I don't want to just roll the dice again. The dice that everyone has of having a random genetic anomaly and having a miscarriage because of that. I was like, I can't do this to myself. And I recognized how lucky and how blessed I am that I have parents who, I talked to them about it a lot, and they were like, we will be willing to help you out with IVF if you did decide to go down that route. So like, I recognize how privileged that is. But they'd seen me for like, at this point, a year and a half, just be devastated and just, So I actually ended up having another break from trying because we were waiting on this IVF appointment. Talking to the doctor there, she was like, yep, you could get IVF with something called like PGTA testing, where they test the embryos and they only put in the ones that are genetically normal. And I was like, that, look, I just think my body isn't doing that sorting. So having the doctors do that sorting for me yeah, just kind of made sense. I look back and it's like, I don't know if I necessarily needed it or not. Who knows? You don't know what would have happened if I hadn't have done it. But I don't regret it, obviously, because spoiler alert, it gave me my baby. So, so we ended up having an IVF appointment, talked to the doctor. She said that we'd be good candidates. We did a couple more testing. So they tested Ryan's sperm, which they'd never done before, which is good. It was normal, but I just think it's crazy that they wait so long to test the man. I also got an HSG, which is like they put saline into your womb just to make sure there's no scarring or anything from all my DNCs. And then in January 2023, I got my egg retrieval. And because my problem's not getting pregnant, it's staying pregnant, I got a good amount of eggs and a good amount of embryos, and we sent four off for testing because it's really expensive to test them, so we didn't test them all. And two of the ones we tested were genetically normal. So it takes a bit of while, like quite a while, to get those results back. So it was April 2023 when we transferred.
And how was the bit, like, in the lead up to that, did you have to do any, like, obviously there's lots of different forms and methods of IVF, but did you have to do anything to prepare for that transfer?
For the transfer, yeah, I was taking meds and stuff. To be honest, I've taken so many injections and so many meds, I can't exactly remember everything I've done. And a lot of it's the haze, like, especially with my fourth loss, I think your brain, to protect you, sometimes like messes with your memories. There are certain points that I actually just can't pull out from my memory about everything that happened. So I can't really, I definitely did take loads of meds with both the egg retrieval and the transfer, but I can't remember. I do know that I had to take progesterone pessaries because I ended up having to take them the whole pregnancy as well. And they're horrible. You put them up your vagina and they just, they leak out and it's not a fun time.
And so you did the transfer, talk us through like the wait to find out if you were pregnant or not, and then did they recommend that you did clexane and aspirin again, like straight away? Talk us through the initial period.
So they tell you not to test before they test you, but I had to because I'm like that. And I, to be honest, there was a part of me that was like, well, this is the part my body does, is get pregnant. That part I wasn't so worried about, and I was pretty convinced that part would work. It was the actual staying pregnant that I was like not sure if it would work. So I tested early, got a positive, but I was like, eh, we'll see. We'll see how, if it hangs around. And I remember when they called me after the blood test to tell me I was pregnant. And I feel so sorry for the nurse because I bet she was expecting like a really excited response. But I was like, oh, okay. Like, because for me, that's just the first hurdle. So I wasn't, I didn't feel like over the moon or anything. It was just, okay, I'm in the game. Let's see if I stay in it. So I ended up getting some spotting. And then the spotting turned into proper bleeding and I thought this is all over. We did get a first scan with a heartbeat, which obviously I was thrilled about, but then when the bleeding sort of got worse, I was like, oh, it's all over. Because it was quite heavy bleeding. But another scan showed that I had something called a subchorionic hematoma, which I think is like a little bruise inside the womb. It's really common with IVF pregnancies, I think. But it causes bleeding, which obviously when you've had four miscarriages is the last thing you want. So I had a lot of bleeding in the first trimester. I actually had a scan every 2 weeks because I was with the recurrent loss clinic. And so they give you scans every couple of weeks. That's pretty much all they do. They give you progesterone. Oh, and then I had aspirin from the transfer. I was taking aspirin and I had clexane from the positive test. So I was injecting myself every day and taking the aspirin and also taking the progesterone, and did that throughout the first trimester, which was obviously just so stressful because of all the bleeding. But then it kind of petered out, the bleeding, and I had an appointment with the preterm birth clinic because I'd had so many DNCs. They were worried my cervix might be weakened. So I was with the preterm birth clinic, and I got a big scan with them, and lucky I did, because there was something wrong, obviously, because it's not very like me to have nothing go wrong at this point. So my placenta, most umbilical cords come out the middle of the placenta, but mine came out the side, which I think is called a velamentous cord insertion. And it's just not ideal, and it was very close to the cervix. So, and there were parts of this velamentous cord insertion where the cord wasn't protected by that jelly that goes outside the umbilical cord. So they didn't diagnose me with it then, but I just kept having regular appointments with them because they wanted to keep an eye on it. But eventually I was diagnosed with something called vasa previa, which is super, super dangerous for the baby. Basically, the bit of cord that's exposed is near the cervix, and when, if you were to go into labor and have contractions with your cervix opening, it could rip the umbilical cord and the baby would bleed out. So you're not allowed to go into labor. So at that point they told me that I would be having a C-section at 35 weeks. Yeah, because it's just that dangerous. I think it's like if it rips, you have 10 minutes before the baby bleeds out. So there's just no way they're going to let you go into labor. So it was actually, they have to do the C-section before you hit 35 weeks. I think that's the plan. So that was really scary. And then at 24 weeks, I went to the toilet and I was spotting. Which isn't a good sign when you've got vasa previa. It's not a good sign in pregnancy anyway. I actually passed out when I saw the blood because I was like, oh my God. We ended up going to hospital and they kept me there overnight, but they were like, oh, I'm pretty sure everything's okay. And I was really wanting to get back home to Billy. All this time away from Billy is really, really hard. And, luckily I went to my sister's because it's closer to the hospital, because that night I went to the toilet and there was tons of blood. So rushed to the hospital. I was like praying in the car the whole way. I really thought I'd lost her. But we got to the hospital. They gave me those steroids that they give for people having a premature baby. But I was like 24 weeks. So I was like, oh, this is crazy. I don't want her to come now. And they had to transfer me to Auckland Hospital, because at North Shore, they don't have the capability to look after babies under 32 weeks. So, yeah, I ended up at Auckland. Luckily, the bleeding sort of subsided, and I ended up at Auckland for a couple of nights. But it was pretty, pretty scary thinking the baby was coming. But thankfully, they don't really know what caused that bleed. So thankfully, they were able to, you know, give me the steroids and everything was fine. Those really hurt too. The steroids they give you for premature babies, they really hurt. So luckily, I got sent home. They were like, I was like, oh, are there any side effects to these steroids? They're like, oh, there's a slightly increased risk of getting gestational diabetes, but don't worry about it. I was like, I can guarantee you I'll get it.
Oh, no.
They were like, no, no. I was like, well, knowing me and knowing everything, I guarantee you I'm going to get it. So I had the test for gestational diabetes, and guess what? I had it. So, yeah, there was another sort of aspect to the pregnancy, which was fun. I have so much respect for people with diabetes now. It's really, really hard. I wasn't able to like eat, because you want to reduce your carb intake, but also I wasn't able to eat enough carbs that were helping me to put on weight. So from that point in my third trimester, I was actually losing weight every week, which was really, really hard and really not ideal. So because it's obviously so dangerous for me to go into labor, I ended up going to hospital to stay in maybe like 5 days or a week before my due date, just on the off chance I went into labor. And that was really hard being away.
You mean the week before 35 weeks? Is that?
Yeah, the week before 35 weeks, from about 34 weeks. I went into hospital and just to stay in the maternity ward there, just in case I was to go into labor. It was very boring.
And how were you feeling? Like, oh gosh, Hannah, I just feel like you've had so many hurdles to jump over, and then you're 34 weeks, you're in the hospital. Like, obviously you're in the best place if you were to go into labor, but you're a week or so away from having a C-section and meeting your baby. Like, how were you feeling mentally? How were you processing everything that was going on? Yeah, talk us through that experience.
It was really weird. I think still at this point I didn't really believe that she was going to make it here and she was going to be okay, because I'd been through so much. I just spent a lot of time like reading and praying and hoping, and just I still didn't fully believe it. And it's a very weird experience waiting for a C-section, and I'd not had one before, obviously. And I'm just sitting waiting. And I was told actually that I was going to be having my C-section on December the 4th. I think it was a Monday. And I was all prepped for that. And I was like, yep, like ready. I'm ready for this C-section. And then in the morning they came to me and they were like, actually, you're not having it today. There's been some emergencies. So you're having it on Wednesday. So it was like another wait. So it was a weird, really weird time. And my son would come and visit me, but he'd find it all a bit weird as well. I don't think he really knew what to make of it. At this point, he's four. And
And did you find like any information useful about preparing for a C-section birth? Were you doing anything, around focusing on your birth?
My midwife had shown me a video, and I'd done some research and stuff, but I don't know how much you can do in preparation for a scheduled C-section. It's kind of like I knew what was going to happen. I'd been warned, and they'd all told me that I wouldn't be able to hold her straight away. I wouldn't be able to do skin to skin because she was early. And I knew as well that they would be taking her straight up to SCBU, which is the special care baby unit. So I think I was prepped for all those things. So when it did happen, I wasn't devastated by that, because to be honest, the fact that she was alive was just such a shock to me after everything that I just, and I was really prepared for the fact that I wasn't going to get to hold her and wasn't going to be able to do skin to skin, and she was going to be whisked away pretty soon after birth. So they did prepare me quite well for everything that was going to happen.
Okay, and talk us through that day.
It's very weird. You've been
put off for another couple of days from when you expected to be meeting her. So, talk us through your C-section experience and then into what happened from there.
Yeah, it's definitely a completely bizarre experience getting a scheduled C-section when you've not had one before. So you kind of go, it's kind of like, I liken it to you're doing it sober, because if I had been in labor, it would have been sort of not being drunk, but you're not completely aware of everything.
Yeah.
But you're going in and you're doing it. So you like bend over and they put the needle in your back, and then you go completely numb, obviously, from the chest down. And you're like, this is weird. And you can feel the tugging and the pulling. And you're just aware of everything. I had my playlist ready, and that was helping to calm my nerves a bit, but I was definitely shaking, which they said is pretty normal with a C-section. They gave me extra drugs for that. And then they pulled her out, and to be honest, I just couldn't believe she was alive. I just couldn't believe I'd got there. after everything. And they showed it to me, but they immediately took her over to that little thing where they take the babies, and she was on the CPAP machine to help her breathe because she was, you know, she didn't want to come out at 30, like it was exactly 35 weeks on the day that she'd come out. And she wasn't sort of ready to come out or anything, but they did put her up near my face for a bit. She was doing really well. They were quite surprised at how big she was. She was 2.8 kg.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty good for 35 weeks on the dot. They were like,
yeah.
I think my midwife said she delivered a full term baby that week that was the same as her. So weight wise, she was doing pretty well. And it was just such a crazy moment. I was just in tears and I just couldn't believe she was finally here. But then they had to wheel her up to Skaboo with Ryan, and I had to go in the recovery place, so I had to be without her. But like I said, it wasn't devastating because I knew this would happen, I was all prepared for it. And then after that, they wheeled me up to Skaboo and I could hold her for the first time, and she was covered with like all the machinery and breathing apparatus, and she was in the incubator and stuff. So it was, yeah, luckily I think the night before my C-section they let me tour the Skaboo, so I was pretty familiar with it. But to be honest, I can't really remember holding her for the first time because I was probably quite drugged up at this point.
And how did you go with like, obviously you're a patient in the hospital after having a C-section, so how did you go? Were you on your own ward and then you'd go down to visit her? Like, how long did that last for? Talk us through your experience with your C-section recovery and then also having her in Skaboo.
Yeah, so Skaboo is just in North Shore Hospital. Skaboo is just across the way from the maternity ward. So I was firstly wheeling myself across to give her my colostrum, and then eventually was able to sort of they were my first sort of steps walking over to the Skaboo to give her my colostrum. Then I think maybe 2 days after my C-section, they said I could go back. My recovery actually went really well. I passed out. I tend to pass out. I think I have low blood pressure or something. I did pass out when they tried to take my catheter out. But apart from that, my recovery was actually pretty good. I think I was very lucky because I've heard some horror stories. But I was able to go home, and that was really hard because you're going home, but you're leaving your baby in the hospital, and you've got your child at home. And I missed him so much that like it would make me cry just thinking about him. I wanted to be home for him, but I also wanted to be there with her. And then what began with our Skaboo journey is like me going in the morning, being there for three feeds, which is like 9 hours worth of waiting around there, and then doing the last feed, then going home and leaving her. And every time I would like cry. They give you a number that you can call in the night, so if you're thinking about your baby and you want to check in on them, you can call. But it's just such a weird feeling. And this was all just before Christmas, and I was just desperate to get her home for Christmas. And they don't really let you go home until you've done a couple overnight stays, just to prove you can feed. And that she's gaining weight. So I did my first overnight stay, and they were like, "She's doing so great. You'll be fine." And we breastfed, but unfortunately, she dropped a lot of weight that first night. So then I had to stay a second night, and again she dropped some more weight. So then on the third night they said if I did some top up of express breast milk, and that worked. And then I finally got to bring her home. It was like the 21st of December. She'd been in there for 2 weeks, and it was just before Christmas, and it just was, because another hard thing is they still have COVID rules in Skaboo. So my son couldn't visit, my parents couldn't visit, my sister couldn't visit, like all these people who had supported me through like what was a really hard journey, couldn't meet her. And that was like, she was there for 15 days. So it was just a really hard time. But then we got her home and everything's gone amazingly since then. Like, she's so good at feeding. She's a dream baby at night. I feel like after everything I've been through, I've just got, like, I don't know, just feels amazing to have her home and to, yeah, I just, every day is just the best day of my life. And I'm like, my hardest day with a newborn is just so much easier than my easiest day going through infertility and recurrent loss. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Hannah, I just feel so happy for you that you have her in your arms and that she's there. And yeah, I feel so, so happy for you.
Yeah, but I still can't believe it.
Yeah, I know. I know. I bet it feels like that, like, every day.
Yeah, it does. And I was so worried about the age gap because, like I said, if the first pregnancy after having Billy had worked, I'd have had two kids under two. And that's kind of what I expected. But and every time a month would go by, or I'd be like, oh, my goodness, the age gap is widening. But it's just been the most beautiful thing. Like, he reads dinosaur books to her every morning. And not that he can read, but he just tells her made up dinosaur facts. And he just loves her. And it's been really beautiful. And it just goes to show that all those things that you worry about, there's actually something more beautiful in store for you. And, not that it's not going to be hard, but the reward has been just incredible.
And how have you gone, like, with your feeding journey since coming home? Has it been, I know you said she's an amazing feeder, so are you exclusively breastfeeding her this time, or what does that look like for you?
Yep, I'm exclusively breastfeeding, which is just amazing. I like look over at Billy, I'm like, see, it wasn't my fault. But yeah, she's just doing really, really well and gaining weight really well. And she sleeps really well. And I just cannot complain at all. So it's gone. I mean, I had a lot of help actually in Skaboo. There's a lactation consultant there. And she was really, really helpful. And in a way, maybe that extra bit of support while I was there made it possible. I don't know. So as stressful as Skaboo is, and I have, like, my hat's off to parents who do NICU and long Skaboo stays, because we only did 2 weeks and it was so, so hard. But in a way, I guess maybe it meant that we had a really positive breastfeeding journey.
Amazing. And what about physically, your recovery from your C-section? How do you feel, this far out? And how did you find it initially?
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky with that for a change. It's been, fine. I don't know whether it's made a bit easier when it's an elective one or I don't know, but it just healed pretty quickly and I feel pretty much back to normal now. 13, 14 weeks out. So,
amazing. Well, thank you so much, Hannah, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I think, like I said earlier, there'll be a huge number of people who are experiencing pregnancy loss or infertility that resonate with this episode and are grateful that you are so willing to share. And I think, like, the amount of hope that you've managed to find through this process and then eventually end up with your beautiful baby girl is just incredible. So I am absolutely in awe of you, but very grateful that you were willing to come on the podcast and share your stories. So thank you.
Actually, it's funny you said that, because my daughter's middle name is Hope. My little ray of hope that I kept clinging to when I was going through everything. So
thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I'd love to hear from you if you want to chat to me on Kiwi Birth Tales on Instagram, or you can find me, Jordan, Jordyn, at kiwibirthtales.com, and I will be back with you with another beautiful birth story very soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.